Are you ready, Shelley? Okay. I'll go ahead and call our regular scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting this morning, April 1st, 2014. If the audience would join the board in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Next is public comment section. This period is for the public to address topics on today's agenda. Not seeing anybody move to the mic. We can do consideration of minutes from 3:25 of 14.
Move approval.
Second. Anything further? Sanders?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. I think what we'll do is go ahead and move. Wait a minute. Did you hear? Did you see Sue out in the hallway? Okay. Yeah, don't worry, Sue. We're not waiting on you or anything. Okay. We'll go ahead and move down to item 7 real quick. We have a presentation from the Iowa State Association of Counties for our county assessor and our county recorder for, well, I'll just go ahead and read it. 35 years of service, we hereby express our sincere appreciation to Sue Vandekamp for dedicated service to Story County government. And for 40 years of service, we hereby express our sincere appreciation to Wayne Swickerath for dedicated service to county government. If I can get Wayne and Sue to come up, we will give them their presentation from ISAC.
We're taking pictures.
I didn't bring a camera.
Come on. Mimotos. Five. I'm getting the back side. Don't. Perfect. Awesome. Congrats.
Okay, that'll move us back to item number 5, agency reports, Legal Aid Society of Story County. Tara, can you help me with the last name a little bit? Very good. Couldn't have said it better myself.
No, that's not right. That's
yeah.
Not right.
If you'd just come down here to the desk for us, please, and make sure the green light's on the microphone.
My mother is a retired now kindergarten teacher. So just imagine all of those new 5-year-olds every single year going in there and being told that they weren't allowed to call her Mrs. Van. They were there are kids all over Jacksonville, Florida who shout across the mall, "Hi, Mrs. Van Brederode." Perfectly pronounced. Well, thank you so much for the chance to come talk with you again. Jessica Reynolds and I were just saying that it feels like I was just here moments ago. I know it was already a year. But so much has changed in our office over the past year that even though the time feels like it's gone very fast, we really have a lot of neat new things to tell you about. Many of them are just improvements in professionalism in the office. I think both of the supervisors who are here have visited our space since it's been updated and renovated. And that, as small a thing as that is, that has actually been a very significant change in the way our office feels, both to our employees and to our clients. I had a client come in the other day, a longtime client, a guardianship case that we've had open for quite a long while. And we were helping her at the front desk, and she said, "So you're new to me," and to Melissa, our office manager. And I said, no, I've been here a while. And she said, you're not new? And I said, no. And she looked around and she said, "Something's different." So I think it's made all of us look younger or different or something. So those changes are cosmetic changes, but they really have affected, I think, our clients' experience in visiting with us and the sense that they have that when they're arriving in our office, they're going to get high-quality legal services. Last, to give you kind of some numbers, last fiscal year, we helped about 482, I think, clients with cases. That number has been fairly consistent. One difference that the supervisors may notice from previous years, and we've talked about this with our asset funders as well, that number has dropped from some of the highest numbers that we've seen. And the reason for that is that our board adopted a new policy that rather than keeping some of our long-time cases that we used to keep open just to monitor, rather than keeping those open, we're closing those and requiring that those clients requalify for services from time to time. It's important to me to make sure that everyone who is receiving services through our office is, in fact, income eligible and residency eligible. We've tended to keep guardianship files in particular open for many years. I closed one recently that had been open for 35 years. So that file was showing up in our annual count of files that were open. But quite honestly, in some years, those people weren't receiving services. If those reports are on a biennial reporting cycle, nothing was happening. And so one of the changes that I've put in place and our board has approved is that we're able to report now numbers of cases on which we've actually done work. And I think that's much more helpful for the supervisors. Obviously, the county is paying us only for hours that we have directly billed, so the hours that we're billing are hours of service provided. But those case totals are not inflated anymore by those cases that we're just sort of carrying along. So that's slightly different. The other thing that I think has been a significant change in our practice, and this is maybe a result of that and maybe a result of just some increased efficiencies, we've dropped down from an average of about 11 hours per client, on average again, to handle a case from beginning to end, down to under 10. And that's something that, again, I think is a really significant change for us. It's probably due to the use of an online case management system that we've now had in place for over a year. Our staff have just become more aware of the importance of moving cases along, kind of getting things going and in and out of the office as rapidly as we can, still while providing the quality services that we want to provide. But just making sure that we're, again, getting people in and out the door as efficiently as possible, not making anything take longer than it needs to. So I'm really pleased with that. That, of course, moves our cost per client down pretty dramatically as well. So those have all been great numbers. The numbers have really all moved in a very positive direction over the past year or so. We've had a couple of staff changes, but not any kind of not our core staff since I was here last. We've had the same three attorneys in place for now over a year. We do, and our office manager, I think, joined us before I reported to you last year as well. So she's been in place for over a year. She has just, again, put in place all sorts of great new efficiencies for us, which is wonderful. We have right now three ISU work-study students. They are spectacular. In fact, they're sometimes too efficient. We're trying to generate things for them to do as quickly as we can, and they get them done, and then they come looking to us and say, like, what else can we do for you? So they've been wonderful. And then we do have a new receptionist who we just hired this past week. So we're up to a full staff and then some in terms of handling the workload that we have going on. I don't know if there is any other specifics about what we've been doing. There really haven't been any significant changes to our caseload. Still breaks down in about the same way as it always has, primarily family law cases. We're still handling all of the same kinds of cases with that now caveat in place that we don't keep those files open forever. We make people requalify and then reapply for services. Clients, longtime clients, have expressed a little bit of frustration about that, but quite honestly, the motivation was twofold for that. One, I wanted to make sure that we weren't carrying cases that would have generated fees for private attorneys in the community, and I think that's important to just make sure that we stay friends with them. And the other reason is that we attorneys actually can get notices of delinquency if we don't keep up with filings in those cases, and occasionally those clients were either moving away or becoming unresponsive. And as that happened, we were spending a lot of time chasing those files down. That may actually be another reason why we've seen some efficiencies in the number of hours. So is there anything that I can tell the two of you? I'm happy to fill in any details for you. Things are going great. Obviously, you've got our new little brochure. This year is our 40th anniversary. We'll be celebrating that on May 1st. I'd like to invite the two of you, and I'll talk with Mr. Clinton personally, too. We're going to have an open house. Ruth Harkin, the former county attorney, is going to be back here speaking. She was one of our incorporators back in 1974, so she'll be talking to our assembled group there, and we're going to have people who've been connected with the organization, obviously all of the people that have been supportive of us emotionally, financially, every other way. So we would love to have you there. It's going to be the evening of May 1st at the SCORE Pavilion here in Nevada.
Very good.
Anything else?
Sarah, you do a great job. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thanks. Very pleased with how things are going in the office. Come see us anytime.
Absolutely.
Next is Lutheran Services of Iowa, Mark Roberts and Elise Murchison.
Good morning.
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 You go start.
Okay, I'll go ahead and begin. I will echo the sentiment that it seems like just weeks ago I was here last. One thing that helped me to realize that this is indeed a different year is I think in the several years I've come here, this is the first time in April I've needed a jacket. So hopefully spring will get in a full bloom here before long. I'm here representing our services for people with disabilities. It's one of the service lines that is supported through asset funding. I would also like to point out that we do have, as you're aware, a number of services at Lutheran Services. The one that people tend to be most familiar with is the Beloit services and the services that are provided there for children statewide. I'd also like to mention that this year Lutheran Services is celebrating its 150th anniversary. So we have a long track record of providing services in some form or another throughout the state. Regarding services for disabilities, not a lot has changed there. Primarily what we're providing continues to be our supported community living service and respite services. And those services are, for the most part, based on Medicaid eligibility for individuals. So Medicaid continues to be the primary source of funding. Rates are established through cost reporting on those. The major change we are dealing with, of course, involves the reorganization process. And as providers, we just have to, as the sands shift, make sure we're standing in the right place when everything's all settled. Regarding the funds that are provided through the asset funding, these funds continue to provide support for individuals who, for one reason or another, are not eligible for Medicaid services. They may be kind of on the border of eligibility, or they may be awaiting services. Out of approximately 45 to 50 individuals who receive supported community living services in Story County, we tend to run about 4 to 8 individuals annually who qualify for that service. And that is one that is reimbursed to Lutheran Services as the service is provided. It's a fee-for-service that we bill for once the service is complete. I think that's all that I have for our services for people with disabilities, and I'll hand it over to Early Childhood now.
Hi. Yes, I'm representing People Place, which is LSI's early childhood program in Ames. We're not located on the main campus on Northwestern, but we're up on 6th Street, across street from the library. We offer several services. Well, we try to be encompassing to all of the families of children with young children. So we provide drop-in where children come and parents come. We have parent education. We also have parents as teachers, which is an in-home visitation program. There's a lot of people are looking at the importance of early childhood and starting with parents as even prenatally, and the importance of school readiness and how that impacts the child all the way through adulthood. There's a lot of interest in that, and that's what Parents as Teachers does. It is just that we're saying that parents are the children's first teachers, and we support the parents in that, in how they can relate to their children, provide services for their children, and just play with their children in a way that promotes security and helps them to be ready for school. We also have the Crisis Child Care Program, which is for families that are having a crisis. We provide care for their children. It can be a few hours. It can be up to 72 hours for the families. And it is important for preventing, you know, giving these people in crisis a place where they know their children can be safe because they are in a licensed developmental home. Just some figures. In our, terms of our resource center, that would be our what we have Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday for parents in the morning. Excuse me. And parent education to date, which would be from July, 17 families, 21 children. We've offered 29 sessions of parent education this year. Crisis child care, let's see if I have a figure. We have in Story County, we do more than Story County, we do Boone County as well, but just in Story County, we have served 49 children ages 0 to 12. 0 to 6, 35. Of that breakdown, young children under 6 were 35 children, 6 to 12, 14 children. And in terms of our parents as teachers, we are serving at this point 32 children in that program. Any questions?
I don't think I have any. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Appreciate the work you do. Thank you for coming over.
Thank you.
Okay, that will take us to consideration of personnel actions.
I'll move approval.
Second, anything further? Sanders?
Aye.
Two, aye. The personnel actions are approved. Consent agenda, we need to add a road closure, 1429.
And I'll move approval with the noted change.
Second, any discussion? Sanders?
Aye.
Toot, aye. The consent agenda has been approved. No public hearing items. That'll take us down to... Oh, yes, there is. Public hearing to receive comments on a proposed transfer of ownership of the Story County Secondary Roads Maintenance Building to the city of Slater. So if anybody has any comments they'd like to make, this would be the time for them to come forward and make them. We will open the public hearing. Darren, if you just want to give us a little background...
I think you're familiar with this item. We've discussed it at previous board meetings, and since then, the City of Slater has taken council action to request we move forward with transfer of our, it's pretty much our vacant shed right now in Slater, and they would like to take ownership of that because it's on their main street, and I assume it'd be more of a beautification project for them, and they, at this point, I think, plan to demolish the building, but I think Mary Beth, is she here? Oh, okay. Come on. You want to come up and maybe tell us what the council action did?
It is the city council's intention to do some kind of improvement to the property. They haven't come to the conclusion as whether it would be demolished. We haven't been able to get an assessment yet of whether it needs to be demolished. If it's salvageable, it will, in the long-term plans, are to make it a retail space for our main street because it's in a very significant location, anchored right next to City Hall. So,
okay. Well, thank you for coming. To meet code requirements, we have to hold this hearing to transfer county property, and then if the board would like to move forward with this, we would put it on next week's consent agenda as a resolution to approve the quitclaim deed. So that's all I have.
Anybody else have anything they want to add to this or any questions they'd like to ask?
Yeah.
Yep, sure. I'll go ahead and open the public hearing at 10:20. Anybody having any comments to make, this would be the time if they want to come forward. And not seeing any movement towards the mic, I will close the public hearing.
And I would move that we acknowledge all comments and we ask that this come to us next week to go ahead and finalize.
I'll second that. Is there anything further? Sanders?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. There we go. Shelley, anything else you need for that? Okay, that takes us down to additional items. Consideration of approval of resolution 1481, amending the technical assistance to communities program established by resolution 1354. Rick Sanders.
And this has my name on it, but Leanne has put together the packet. There's three items in our packet. One is the letter that would go out to the municipalities if in fact we do this. Second is the resolution, and then finally is the application that any municipality interested in participating would need to fill out. It is basically a continuation of what we did last year in offering up to $3,000 or 75% of the cost for a municipality to undertake one of the items that we lay out in working on their planning documents. And then it adds a second component for those municipalities who did something last year when we offered. It adds $2,500 up to 100% to continue that work. Leanne, anything to add to that, or you want to clarify anything that I've said? Paul, it's something that we talked about. We tried it out last year to see if it would work. Leanne, how many municipalities took advantage last year? Six took advantage. I believe there'll be more than that. Jennifer, I don't want to put you on the spot, but Jennifer is now the chair of the Story County Economic Development Group. I would suggest if we pass this, her and I will go Thursday and report out to the group. My expectation is a few of the municipalities who did not participate in this last year would, in fact, come forward. Do you have any feel on that? Where was Slater? Did Slater participate last time? Is this something Slater would have interest in? I just think it's another step we can take to help our smaller communities.
Sure.
The only thing I will add, just like last year's program, it goes back to the beginning of this fiscal year for any projects that have started as of July 1st, 2013, through the end of this current fiscal year, acknowledging that while the communities, after they had done the first round, for those that did complete the first round, they likely did continue on, and some of them did likely continue on with projects, and so we can acknowledge that and reimburse them for those costs.
Very good. I will go ahead and move approval of Resolution 1481.
And I'll second it.
Motion and a second. Anything further? Toot, aye. Sanders?
Aye.
Resolution 1481 is approved. Thanks, Leanne. Next is a discussion and consideration of Amendment Number 1 of the Iowa Department of Transportation Secondary Road Fiscal Year 14 Budget. Darren Moon.
Okay, I've given you a handout to follow along on this. First of all, let me explain the timing a little bit. We have two budgets. We have a DOT budget and a county budget that we have to submit each year. This is the DOT side of things. It's much cleaner for us to do all of our amendments before we approve our next year's budget and program. So that's why I'm doing this now, and hopefully approve FY15 budget and program for the DOT next week. We'll get to the amendment next for the program, but the budget, you can see we have four new expenditures we're requesting to amend the budget for. Under budget, the first one is the Jasper County Bridge. That's on the county line, so it's be a shared project. We've worked out an agreement with Jasper County. They would construct it with their in-house crews, and they would just bill us for mostly materials, so it'd be $30,000 for us, which is a good deal for Story County. And they plan on starting that project real soon and getting it done out of this current fiscal year, so that's why we need to add that $30,000. That $30,000 is really there already. We just need to show it on paper that we added a project for $30,000 in our construction, so we don't really need any additional monies to come in, but because it's already there. The second item is the FEMA rock. We're going to add $248,000. Essentially, that is what we're getting in revenues at the bottom from FEMA from the flooding last spring. About $110,000 of that was rock that we've already put down on the road, so that's material costs we've already spent. that leaves some additional money there. We got reimbursed for equipment and labor, and that's already in our budget. So this will be additional money that we could spend on other things. Originally put this together, we were anticipating a bad spring thaw on our gravel roads, so we thought we might have to pump that into rock. Fortunately, things are going fairly well at this point, so we probably won't need to spend much additional on rock. But the other thing is we do need to fill up our salt shed. We try to have that filled at the end of each year, and we're lucky we did this year because there was a salt shortage, and because we had such a stockpile in-house, we were able to get through the winter without any difficulty. But and the other issue is, since there is the shortage, the costs are really going to go up next year. And so we're still under contract on the current year, so everything we can get at our current price will be beneficial to the county. So we're going to use some of that additional money. I'm guessing it'll be in the $25,000 range of additional salt cost. The third item is the lowboy trailer. That's something we had in next year's budget, but we decided to move it up because we had some additional money out of the current budget. Some of that was due to, we had originally budgeted for a new motor grader, and since we went with leasing, that freed up probably $20,000 to $30,000 of unspent money there to put towards this lowboy. And the additional money could either come out of that FEMA reimbursement or the other revenue at the bottom of State Street. We're getting $35,000 back from labor we did for ISU. And then lastly, the pavement maintenance item that's more just a paperwork issue. We had that $132,000 budgeted last year, and it carried over past July 1st. The bill got paid after July 1st. That happens quite often with construction falling in the middle of the year and the fiscal year ending. So that's just a paperwork item. It was budgeted last year, but we spent it out of this year. And then at the bottom, the revenues, FEMA, $248,000 coming in. We expect that to come in this current fiscal year. I can't guarantee that at this point, but if it comes in past it'll just be there next year, and it'll all come out in the end. And then State Street, we also expect that to come in yet this fiscal year. Any questions on the amendment? We're not really asked for any additional money. It's just using the money we have.
I don't have any questions. I'd move approval of amendment number one for Iowa DOT.
I'll second. Anything further? Sanders?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. Amendment number one has been approved. And next, we have discussion and consideration of Resolution 1477, a resolution to revise the Story County Fiscal Year 2014 Five-Year Road Program.
This goes back to the Jasper County Bridge to meet DOT requirements. Since that bridge replacement falls under construction, we have to show that project in our five-year program. It wasn't currently in there, so we're able to do it. It's a new method now. We're able to do it just by resolution instead of having a full program amendment. So the resolution will just add that Jasper County Bridge into the accomplishment year the first year, and then we'll be able to proceed and get that paid for out of this fiscal year yet.
Yeah, so I move approval of Resolution 1477.
I'll second it. Anything further? Sanders?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. Resolution 1477 is approved.
Thank you.
See you soon. Departmental reports, environmental health. Margaret James. Morning, Margaret.
Morning. I always have a presentation about that. My crutch. Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Start off with numbers. By our numbers, it looks like we're sitting around doing nothing, but believe me, we are doing a few things down there. So far, only one inspection this year and two new permits applied for, and I haven't done the soils work yet because we still have frozen issues. So, and the market, real estate market's really slow right now, too. The other thing that's happening is the inspections for the time of transfers, they're being postponed for the spring because, again, of the weather. We had just all sorts of calls coming in about frozen systems. Of course, they've died down since the weather is warmer now. So in response, we put some information up on our website so that we could refer people to that. We had an article in the Nevada Journal. I was interviewed, and it was regarding the Datasmin system. We're getting a lot of complaints that we are requiring the systems be installed too shallow, but that is all according to state code. They have to be that shallow or go with a lot more expensive system. So we will be trying to address some of those issues this coming construction year, but not a lot we can do about that. Next fall, I plan on advising homeowners to let their grass grow longer over their laterals so that it captures the snow and you have better protection that way, more insulation. Snow fencing, you can mulch the system if you can't get the grass growing in time. And then I'm going to advise them not to install the systems quite so late in the year so that you can get a good bacteria in the tank to get that system warmed up a little better. Up our neighbors to the north, Minnesota, they do install these heaters that for the septic systems, and so it's an expensive option, but an option, definitely worth it if you're getting sewage backed up into your basement. Oh, thank you. Until next winter on that. Enforcement: 10 outstanding notice of violations. Most of those septic. Most of those can't be addressed until the weather changes. Binding agreements are still hanging out there because of the weather. And then as far as complaints that we received, frozen systems, and then one call on the one house that I have a lead enforcement on that somebody's been living there. I have not seen any.
Is that the one here in Nevada?
Yes.
I know they're doing work. Somebody's doing some work on it.
Okay, so maybe that's why they thought. Although I thought it was going to be torn down.
There's a big roll-off dumpster, I think, in the front yard, and I've seen the door open.
Oh, okay. Maybe asbestos.
No.
Okay, that's good to hear. And then Tullamore Glen Creek, I had a complaint on that. People were afraid that there was pollution entering that creek. It was during that really cold spell, and there was like 4 inches of slush just on the creek surface. And I never came up with clues. I tested above and below for BOD, and there was a small difference, but nothing that indicated septic was flowing there. So keeping an eye on that. That's all we can do at this point. We did receive a smoke-free air complaint about a bar in Maxwell. And so I forwarded it to IDPH. They send out, their procedure is they send out the first letter with ways they can comply. And then if they get another complaint, another letter goes out. And then also to the local law enforcement, local government. So you all would receive something if it were outside a city, okay? And, and then the liquor license folks also get a copy. I since then learned that that bar probably is in compliance, that they've got special air movers and tobacco sales on site that allow them to have people smoking in there. But we posted this on our website, too, so that if people have smoking inside complaints, they know where to go, hopefully. Well, numbers, again, with the wells, not too much going on with that. 4 new ones, 2 water, 2 geothermal. 15,000 remaining in the grant fund. Have to start pushing some renovations and plugging. That's all we can do. Lead program, 8 open cases. And then I visited 2 clients with mid-range lead levels. And instead of doing a full-blown inspection, if there's a true lead poisoning case, I do the dust levels in places of obvious accumulation, and then it's just an educational approach to that. I did sit for 2 exams and receive my EBL recertification, good for another 3 years.
This was the discussion that we had at the Board of Health, wasn't it, about whether to continue that program?
Yes.
Okay, and we've decided to go ahead and continue it.
At least for another year.
It needs for another year.
Data management will improve drastically if they go, online as opposed to software. Yeah.
And Homer's the one that does it, all the data management. You're just the inspection part of that. Okay.
So pools, tanning, and tattoo program. We had one hotel pool and spa that we had to close for violations. It was pretty tricky. They as soon as Matt left, they reopened it. I went and visited them at night, peeked in the window, and sure enough, they were open. So I had to go close them again. And so it's been, kind of a steep learning curve, but we're getting it down. And I believe that they are in compliance now. We're requiring that they submit their pool chemical records monthly to us so that we can make sure that they are continuing to do this. The pool program is going to be a lot of work because it has really run amok for a good little while, I'm led to believe. So it's a good thing that Story County Environmental Health has taken over that program, a very good thing. No activity with our tanning program, and then tattoo, five facilities in the county, all in the city of Ames. And so seven inspections were completed, and all are now in compliance. And then May 1st, they'll have IDPH has an annual training for us folks that keep our certification up, so all three of us will attend that.
I give you guys a picture of my daughter. If you ever see her in there, we can run around.
God, I think.
So I'm just.
How old is she?
19. So.
Oh, she's old enough.
Yes, she is.
None of your business, Dad.
Not quite old enough. Okay.
Let's see, training and meetings. I went to the Groundwater Association. Really interesting. They're tracking viruses now in the aquifers as opposed to, like, radioactive things. And it's really effective way to track how groundwater moves. EBL certification and LEPC with Keith and Melissa. Kathy also went to the Iowa Groundwater Association. Matt is still running the EAC. Kristen, she did the Leadership Nevada program. Graduation is coming up for her. And she also attended the Grant Writing USA. She said that was a very good class and recommends it for folks. Hickory Grove Lake Watershed. We did get the WERB grant, as you both know. Most of that money goes towards stream bank stabilization. However, it does affect our program in that $17,000 came from WERB, $10,000 from the Story County Water Conservation District, and then $18,000 from you, and thank you very much. That package of money will go toward replacing systems. There's nine systems to be replaced, up to 50% of the cost of that. Right now we had that $4,000 to help with the pumping program. Not one person has agreed to do it yet. We've had a lot of people interested. Not a lot. A few people interested, but they're afraid of what they'll find. And so they're just, it's like a poker game. Everyone's waiting, to see, well, is this going to be required? And if it is, I'll do it. If it's not going to be required,
Mark, help me with the next step, because I really like what you guys have put in place and what you're doing now, the 50% of a new system for these nine. What happens if they don't?
If they don't, I am going to take it to the board to make it a requirement. If you
And that's us?
Board of Health.
Okay.
I'm sorry, to the Board of Health, which would come then through Board of Supervisors for those impaired water bodies in Story County. So that would be bigger than the Hickory Grove because it includes Skunk River, for example. And there's no money available for them, but it would just be a requirement. I don't think that we can just focus on that, but we could focus on the water impaired. I don't know if it's going to fly, but that is my next plan. And before that happens, I want to hold a meeting with the Hickory Grove, those nine homeowners, either have a group meeting, and if they're not interested in that, go door to door and talk to them about what they need to do. They're getting close to agreeing with me, I do believe.
A new system is what? New average cost for a new system?
I said $10,000, ballpark.
That's if it's a pretty simple system. Nothing.
You
that wouldn't do a mound system.
12 will probably do a mound system.
Oh, okay.
But then some of them will be cheaper than that, so I think it'll.
Well, we can just keep plugging away at it. I mean,
I've had a few questions about people using those pumping funds toward putting in the new system, but that was before we got the grant. So we'll just kind of hope that goes away for a while. As you all well know, there was a DuPont Stover fire at 670th and 190th Street. The Nevada, Colo, McCallsburg, and Zeering fire departments responded. Controlled burn on the adjacent property. 5,200 bales were lost, and this is as per the DuPont person. They email us regularly. And then kudos to the emergency planning for being ready for an emergency of this nature. Keith back there, good job. That was the smoke plume, pretty cool. I mean, not devastating by any means, but you could definitely see that there was something bad going on. I wonder what the Yonkers fire smoke plume looked like. That would have really been something. Miscellaneous, Andy James is our new scanner person. Tim took a job with ISU.
How close are we on scanning, Margaret?
Oh, we're going to be done by the end of the fiscal year. We are on to the tanning and pools and
outstanding
county stuff. Yeah, we're doing great,
that's
actually.
Good.
We're doing great. Yep, we're going to be done for sure. And as you well know, new phones. I finished the performance evaluations for my staff. We did 9 interagency reviews this month. Two that kind of stand out, Prairie Moon, you're probably all familiar with them. They have a wine license, and now they want to also do brewing, beer brewing on site, which is cool, really cool, but it's a totally different wastewater treatment process. So they would have to be kicked up to DNR because their product is not being produced on their land, and so they don't automatically just get to do on-site, land application, things like that. So they opened a can of worms is what they did. So I don't know if they will go forward with that or not. And then Black's Farm, just south of Ames, you're familiar with that. They have a lot of exciting programs that they want to do. The problem is that most of them are using portable toilets and hand washing facilities, and they are not planning on having an on-site wastewater treatment. So that's something that we are really going to have to keep an eye on to make sure that public health issues are being addressed. Ada Hayden Watershed, just today I got an email from Bella Holmes on that subdivision they want to develop at the golf course there, and they're interested in discharging to the road ditch, and I told them that county engineer does not allow that at all. So we just put our foot down, bam, like that, and then they quit asking. And then finally we did the Farm Family Expo here in Nevada. That was our second year that we did it, and it was mostly it seemed like it was an opportunity for people to come up to me and complain about their shallow frozen septic systems, and I don't think I'm going to set myself up for that again next year. It was very unpleasant. And here for April Fool's Day, I trust you not to pull any April Fool's Day pranks because I trust you'll still think it's March. Well, I've already had a few pulled on me, so that's not true. Any questions?
Not yet. I'll think of some for this afternoon, though.
I'll switch up the slides for this afternoon for you.
Sounds good. Thank you, Margaret.
Thanks, Margaret.
Next is other reports. Discussion of draft for Story County Secondary Roads 5-year construction program. Darren Moon, again. Now, this is the one that's going to take a little while, correct?
Correct.
Should we take just a couple-minute recess? If anybody needs to take a break before we get started, we'll go ahead and recess for. Okay, we'll go ahead and get started, Darren.
Ellie, can you go ahead and dim the lights on that side,
maybe?
Oh,
yeah, I'm sorry.
Thank you. Yep. Try that. Did that help that side?
Or outer?
That side. That's good there. We'll try that. Okay, I'm going to give a draft presentation of our five-year program. The intention here is to show you the draft, and then you guys can look at it over the week and take public comments for a week and hopefully approve the final next week. And as a last resort, we could extend it one more week to April 15th, but we got to have it approved by April 15th. Iowa code requires we do this five-year program every year for a five-year basis on or before April 15th. Some general rules to follow. Programming should be based on the amount of funding available to spend, and then ideally the projects enter in the fifth year and then work their way up to the accomplishment year. New paving projects must meet paving points or a hearing is required. And lastly, the road system that the project is on may determine what type of funding can be used. We have local roads, farm to market roads, and federal aid classifications. A number of factors we use to add projects to the program, and of more and more importance every year as the last one, are the funds available. The first thing we do every year is approve the local side of our construction budget. And this is what has been approved for our FY15. We have four projects approved. This is the local dollar amount, and we had a couple of additional things we have every year's placement. For a total of $412,500 is what we have for local construction. You'll actually see in the budget $1.2 million because we have these upfront reimbursable items. One is the bridge, and that's federal aid money that comes back to us. And the second one is the Hickory Grove Bridge, which is still a question mark whether that'll be FEMA money or if we need to make it a federal aid bridge project. But either way, it will get reimbursed. So our total asking is really 412. We just need the 1.2 as kind of a placeholder for a year. This is the construction program format that has to be submitted to DOT. It's not easy to follow, so I have a different format that I've presented and hand it out to you. Kind of got it broken into two things, pavement and then structures. Let's start on the pavement side of things. Just to give you an idea of the ages of our pavements, we have PCC pavements and asphalt pavements. They have different design lives. That's why they're broken separately. The ones in yellow are the ones that are actually in our five-year program right now. Couple PC pavements getting some age. This one's 48 years old, and this one's 41 years old, so they've lasted pretty good, but it's time they get at least an asphalt overlay. We'll be using federal aid money to do both those projects. Beyond that, our PC roads are in pretty decent shape. When this Boone County one does come due, it's 10 miles long, so you're talking millions of dollars to redo that road. It's, you know, it's got 30 years on it, but it's holding up pretty good. Looking at the asphalt side of things, we've got a couple of older ones around Story City, but they're still not in too bad a shape. North Dakota is probably our worst condition-wise right now, and we're going to do some maintenance patching on that the best we can for a few years and see if we can hold it over. But as of now, we've left it in there in the fifth year. As most of our, especially asphalt pavements this winter, the cold temperatures were not kind on them. And it's got some additional cracking and sloughing on the sides we're going to have to deal with. But at some point, something more major is going to have to be done with North Dakota. E57 Kelly, that's just a one-mile stretch in the program. And then we added this Gilbert pavement. Especially with asphalt pavements, they're very variable because some of them, like the Collins, only had a 2-inch overlay. Some have 4 or 5-inch overlays. So they're really variable on when they come up and do. But for the most part, mainly due to our bonding, we're doing pretty good with our pavements, especially when you compare us to other counties. When you look at the condition of our pavements, that $7.4 million in bonding money really gave us like a 10-year advantage borrow ahead there for a while, so that really helped our pavement side of things. You've seen this before, that we estimate a 40-year design life for PC pavements and 25-year for HMA. If you average that out, we need to be spending on average almost $2.3 million a year on roads. What do we have available out of our farm to market? We estimate about $725,000 a year going towards pavements. in federal aid STP money, about $533 a year. So that adds up to $1.2 million. So you can see the shortfall in the long term. And that continues, that gap gets bigger every year, it seems like. And I point out that that's just existing payments. That doesn't even take into account if we pave new roads, and that does come up from time to time. If you want to follow along with the spreadsheet, this shows you all the projects we have in our current program. If it has a year over here, that means it's in the program. Beyond that, it's just our wish list, our needs. Very few changes on the pavement side of things this current year. The only things I wanted to point out was number 7. That's North Dakota again. We pushed that back into the fifth year, 2019, thinking something's going to have to be done, a grading and paving job eventually, but we're going to try to patch that along until then, see if we can get by. And the only other new item in this list this year would be number 10. That's 505 Fifth Avenue. That's the new subdivision we have up there, 505th. It's probably going to be a grade and pave at some point. We're not real sure, and that could end up being a cost share with developer, but that's still yet to be seen. And really all the rest of these are what you saw last year, and beyond what's in the program, these are almost all grade and pave, so that'd be new paving jobs. Any questions or comments about the paving side of things?
I'll just tell you that I've gotten, I think, maybe a couple of calls here, not in the recent past, about the, it's the gravel road south of Nevada that runs off of Country Club Road.
South S.
Avenue. I've had two or three people ask if that was, I think at one point it was in the program and it was taken out. And
Then.
It is not. It's in our wants. It's not in the program.
Yeah,
that was in 15 years ago. We had public meetings, and we were all ready to do it, and then it kind of got dropped out of the program. So, yeah, the landowners probably remember that when it was. And when we did that bridge replacement project, we designed the bridge to accommodate paving. So something I'd like to see happen, but, of course, we need to come up with the money. Here's a map showing the paving jobs that are in the program. The yellow lines are the ones that are in the program. And then these are the ones on our want list. And that's South S right there that you're referring to. So these are not in the program, but they're the ones that keep coming up as some paving needs. The only addition this year was this little stub here. That's that subdivision road off of Cameron School. There's some photos from previous times on those paving jobs. I'll skip those for now. Let's move on to bridges. Slide I've had in here in the past of our bridge needs. We have 200 bridges that meet the federal definition that are over 20 feet long, and then another 76 that are smaller, mostly 16-foot bridges that are included in our total bridge count. We do get $330,000 of federal bridge funding each year, and that's our main source of our bridge replacement money at this time. This one's getting a little out of date, but it just kind of gives you a feel of the age of our bridges. This category here is over 90-year-old bridges. We still have 36 of those out there. I always point out, in general, these older bridges were mostly made out of concrete and steel. Is why they've lasted longer. This is when we had that big influx of wooden bridges built. And the problem is those are all coming up due at the same time. They're all getting to that 50 to 70-year-old, and the wood doesn't last much longer than that. So that's the main reason we're seeing the bridge problem that we are right now. They're all coming due at the same time. I went back and did look at this is my 20th year in county engineering, so I'd go back 20 years and see what kind of accomplishments we've done in Story County. These are actual bridge replacements. A couple of these are pipes, large pipes that don't qualify really as a bridge, but I stuck them in here. That's why our count's a little bit higher than that previous chart. But in the past 20 years, we've replaced 49 bridges with brand new structures, and that's how they're spread out through the county. These are the major bridge repairs we've done. We kind of started that program in 96, so I didn't go back quite 20 years, but we've done 47. Those are the complete add new piling underneath the wood bridges, so the complete reconstruction of the bridge. It doesn't include the minor bridge repairs. So we did 47 of those, so you add both those together, you have nearly 100 bridges in the past 20 years. Almost a third of our bridges we've significantly touched. So we're doing a lot, but doesn't seem like we're gaining ground, unfortunately. One of my main tools when I put the program together for bridges is the Farm to Market route. We got to make sure we at least have that Farm to Market grid that ideally doesn't have any load postings on them. The pink colors, the ones that are load posted. If it has yellow over it, that means we're currently addressing those bridges, replacing them, or will be in the very near future. We're currently building that bridge. This will be built in the next couple months. A couple of these are done already. The other pink ones are ones that are doing okay now, even though they're load posted. And this one here is actually added into the program, one of the new ones I added in the program on 19th Street. I'll get to that a little bit later. But that's my main goal, is to get the Farm to Market without posted bridges. So if you follow on the structures sheet, you can see everything in here on the left side is in the program under a certain year. And if you look under the length column, I added new on the ones that are brand new to this year. So the first one would be number 8. That's Hickory Grove Bridge. So I'll touch on that a little bit more on the status of the Hickory Grove Bridge, but that is a new one. We're not sure where that funding is going to come from yet. The next one down is number 14. That's a bridge deck overlay. You can see we already had a bridge deck overlay just above it, number 13. What we're doing is we're doing two of them and tying them together in one DOT contract to get better prices. I have some pictures of deck overlay. I guess first I'll show you. These are all the bridges that are in the program. The red ones are my new additions. This red one is that bridge deck overlay, and that will match up with this bridge deck overlay up on S27. That's when the bridge gets to a certain age. 40 years is a good lifespan for the top of a deck, and you can see we've done a lot of patching. But at some point, you have to do a full overlay, and that's where you can see it's been milled completely off, and then they jackhammer even more out, and then they do a brand new overlay over the top. This is the one on S27 that needs the overlay. You can see all the patching, but at some point, to get that extra 30, 40 years of life out of it, you need to do an overlay in the middle somewhere. The next new structure would be on the second page, number 24. It's one of our small wood structures. It's posted 17 tons. We'll be able to replace that with a box core, which we like to do wherever we can. That's on 250 Street south of Colo.
Aaron, what's our expectation on the life of these box culverts? I know you've gone to that as replacement for these narrower bridges. What do we think we're going to get out of these?
The box cores we have out there, you know, some of them are over 100 years old. I'd like to say we could get at least 75 years out of those box cores, which is probably twice the lifespan of the wood bridge. So next one is number 25. This is on 675th. This is, again, one of those high concrete walls, but very narrow. The water's actually going underneath the concrete floor of this, and we've patched it a number of times, but it continues to do it. And it's getting to the point where the arch is crumbling underneath, so it just isn't going to last too much longer. Next one is that one on 19th Street south of Nevada. It's a high traffic count road. It's on the Farm to Market system, so we'll be able to use Farm to Market money to do it. The issue with this one is it really drops off on this side of the bridge, so designing the new structure is pretty difficult. And you can see even when they put the bridge in, they left this old arch structure underneath the bridge because they had the same issue. They used the wings to hold up the downlet because you can't see it in the photo, but it just drops off 20, 30 feet on the other side. We're hoping to get maybe some twin pipes in here. We'll be able to put elbows in them to drop it down, but that'd be a big improvement on this highly traveled Farnham Market Road.
So that arch was the first bridge that
That's the old in. Bridge, yeah.
And one on top's the second. So
that's really it's scary just to walk underneath that because it's just crumbling. And we're having issues with it scouring behind it and a lot of holes in the road on the side and stuff, so it's a maintenance headache. But the main issue is the steel's rusted so bad. That's why it's load posted right now. Another bridge on 590 south of E29. This is a bridge. It has a drainage district tile. You can't see it, but it's exposed. It goes at an angle underneath. That's one issue with the bridge. But of all the bridges we have that are load posted, we have more issues with this one enforcement-wise. It gets a ton of grain traffic, semis over it that are overloaded. I think I don't want to accuse anybody of anything, but this load posting bridges disappear quite often. So I think they're taking the posting off, and it's really crushing these beams underneath to the point where the bridge needs replaced, hopefully with a box culvert. It's more of it doesn't have a continual stream through there, so it's more of an overflow type structure. But a concrete box would be great here. I point out, too, this, we have issues with when we have loading issues, that really our only way to enforce those, we call the Blue Boys DOT and ask if when they get time, can they keep an eye on the bridge for us. We do that in the past, but just got an email last week. The federal government's sending some folks here in a week or two on a fact-finding mission. They know the difficulties we have in enforcing these, so they're going to meet with myself and the sheriff on how we deal with this and how maybe they could help out, because they know the sheriff, they don't have the resources or the scales to weigh these trucks, so we have to rely on the DOT. But when we know we're having issues, what are we able to do? It's a tough situation. And so they're coming to see if they can give any guidance. They're meeting with three different counties in Iowa and some other states also. And the last new addition, this is that bridge on E18. We received a lot of comments when we had that drainage district number 11 meeting. They wanted this bridge added into the program. It's 75 years old, so we've got a lot of life out of it, but it's probably time. We have a lot. It's not load posted right now, but when we get the heavy loads that need permits, this bridge always comes up as a difficult one they can't get across. It's getting some age on it. The steel's rusting and the concrete's deteriorating. Point. We added in the fifth year. It's going to be one of those bridges we're going to get design ready to go, but if a higher priority comes up in the meantime, it might bump it back, but we'll have it ready to go. So that's all the newly added bridges in red, and I just noticed that added that one in at the last minute is that E18 one right here that I just showed you. So that's not shown on the map right now.
Aaron, before you go on, let's talk about number 18, 190th in Franklin. So we had mentioned in passing the possibility that maybe that's one of the bridges that won't ultimately get replaced. And so you've got 505th on here, as they talk about the new subdivision up there, which joins to 190th. 190th runs right by Prairie Moon. But I've heard you say a couple times you've got some real flooding issues, some real scouring issues where water comes over that road pretty regularly. And I thought we talked about at one point the possibility of not doing anything with that bridge when it comes time.
Got some slides of that coming up here. I can show you that.
Okay.
These are just some extra photos of bridges that have been in the program, so you've seen these before. And these are next couple of years, these bridges will get replaced. This one will actually probably hopefully get done south Story City on 550th yet this fall. Again, this will be a local letting we'll have in the next couple months. This is up by Zeering, probably one of our older box culverts, and the center is just almost completely deteriorated out. That one's definitely over 100 years old. Some old structures. And this is the next bridge that you're talking about, Rick. It's just off of 180 or 190th from this, but this is also on 190th. This is in the program. We're struggling with the design on this one for a couple of reasons. One is the alignment, and two is one, the horizontal alignment, and then the vertical alignment. Since this was a gravel road, they went in and did a research project about 15 years ago where they put foamed asphalt in about a foot deep, and then they just seal coat over the top, but they didn't upgrade the road, which leads to future issues, which we're dealing with now. The existing vertical curve in there, well, this is the bridge here. The beams are completely rusted on the sides are the worst, so the middle's still in decent shape, but we got to get it replaced soon. This is the bridge here. It's got the vertical curve through here is probably at a 20 to 25 mile an hour design speed. With the traffic it gets, it's over 600 vehicles a day. It needs to be designed probably on a 40 or 50, but that's nearly impossible. So we're looking at different options. The stream comes in at a really sharp angle and then heads down this way. We're looking at trying to get a box culvert in at an angle through here, but the issue is with how much we have to raise the road up and how it impacts the properties around it. It's going to take a lot of additional land to do that. And on this side, these are all horse pens. I'm sure they're not going to be, they don't have a lot of land for those horses, so they're not going to probably want to sell a lot of property to us. But if we do the box culvert option, it'll be over here. We might be able to avoid a lot of that. But this house is very close to the road. If you zoom out a little bit, you can see the road actually bends a little bit. And I think it had a lot to do with that house because it's a real steep slope up to that house. Trying to avoid all that stuff is going to be difficult, but we're getting some options put together, and we'll bring those in front of the board at some point on how we should proceed.
So is that Bill Bergen's place to the...
Right here, yeah.
That's Bergen's place. Okay, so Prairie Moon is a little more to the east.
Correct.
I guess I didn't even realize we had a second bridge on 190th right there.
Yeah, that's the first one you come down the hill. Okay. Prairie Moon, if you're going west.
Yep.
We're going to have to keep that one. Whatever we do with the other one, we're going to have to keep that one.
We got
to
do that, and I wanted to point out, yeah, this is the other bridge you're talking about. And when we do this bridge, the goal is to do it in 2 years. It might be a little longer depending on the right-of-way concerns. But when we do this bridge, this traffic's probably going to have to take that road to get out. So if closing this is an option, we need to delay that for a couple of years until we get this new bridge replaced. But that's the bridge you're talking about. That's about 120-foot bridge now, but it drops way down to the stream level. To replace that, it'd have to be raised a lot. It ended up being probably a 200-foot-long bridge. This intersection is a concern for me. If we get more traffic coming through this road, it's a blind intersection. Most of the traffic now turns because this is paved going north. But the people coming south and turning this way, it's really blind. We have it signed as an advisory speed of 25 coming this way. But if we get a lot more through traffic, this area is going to be a safety concern for me.
Yeah, so that's what I'm asking you. So gut feel, once you get the smaller bridge replaced, does it make sense to have 190th dead end right there at Squaw Creek, right?
From a safety perspective, I like to see that. This is a zoom out a little bit. You can see this is the area that's going to get developed. We're thinking at some point it might get paved up to here for the development, but then we're trying to avoid the curve because it's too sharp of a curve to pave. We'd have to make it a T, probably in a stop condition.
And you've got a big drop right there, right, which makes the T.
Big really drop behind really it. That's why they put the curve in, because it's a huge ravine here. Big drop right here coming down the hill, right in the middle of some houses close to the road. So bring that up to a paving standard would be difficult with that vertical curve. And you got the low area that seems to flood about every third year. That's the floodplain, but then if you turn on the actual floodplain, this line's a 100-year flood, pretty much inundates that road. It seems like every third year, and it's closed for a while. That's the 500-year. It adds some additional. But that's what we deal with. I was thinking the next time it does that, that'd be the best time to bring it up for possible closure.
I'll just remind you guys that they brought that up one other time.
I know you've mentioned that. Yeah. I wasn't aware of that.
I lived on 505th and for 9 years, and I think at least twice in that 9-year period that was underwater. and one of them was in 93, and then they did circulate a petition, but I think it was circulated by a guy that farmed on either side of that, would be just down there in the flats, and I don't think anybody farms that, do they, down there on the bottoms anymore? I know the guy on the north side doesn't.
North side doesn't. That's an ex-DOT employee.
But that was his concern, is that he would have to go so far out of his way, because he farmed that bottom ground, and he was the one that circulated the petition, not to close that bridge.
So. We'll have some real difficulties with design with this hill and this hill here. The bridge, I'd estimate somewhere around $700,000 for a bridge, and the paving would be another $800,000. So looking at $1.5 million to pave it and bring it up. But I'm not exactly sure how we're going to do it because of our floodplain regulations. This is a detailed study area, and we're not allowed to back up any more water than existing condition. That almost excludes us from raising this road at all, or the bridge. And with the new bridge design regulations, I don't know if it's even possible to do. You can do map revisions to the floodplain, but with our restrictions, say we can't back up any water, I don't know if we even can do a map revision. So that just adds another.
But it sounds to me like the import of getting the smaller one done is huge, because you're going to need this bridge in order to do the smaller one.
They do have access to the north, but it's a lot further detour, so I assume most of them would probably use this route, so I'd rather have this kept open till then. But I don't know how quickly this is going to get developed, but we'll have to just keep an eye on the next couple of years and see what kind of traffic is taken. It'll all be Gilbert School District, so they'll be heading up this direction, unfortunately. But leaving it gravel for now, we'll see how much the traffic prefers to take Cameron School Road or the paved route. So right now I haven't had any of this into the program. We have the small bridge in the 5-year program, 2 years out, and we're working on the design on that already. But a lot of difficulties in that area right now. I had some more pictures of other bridges that have been in the program for a number of years, piling issues. This one is down northeast of Maxwell. This is one we had the comments on at the township trustee meeting. It's causing, we had to go in here and put a makeshift guardrail after this picture was taken, because this is the one with the sign issues holding up the road. And it's narrow enough now with our new guardrail we put on here. It's an issue for farmers. So we've fast-tracked this one and got it in FY16 now. We're starting design on it, so we're trying to get this one done as soon as we can. That's Shipley Road, very narrow box culvert. It's got a lot of age on it, and it's on farm to market, so it's one of them we'll be able to do with farm to market money. This is on S27. It's been in the program a while. The floor is gone. You can see the steel, and there's holes we've patched because water was going underneath. The big issue is the sides, because it starts sucking material, and then it creates holes in the road. It could create a dangerous situation up on top. We delayed this 1 year. We've got it patched up good enough for now. But the Collins closure is going to create a lot of additional traffic on S27 this upcoming year. So we delayed it 1 year because of that, but we'll hopefully be able to get to it the year after. This is the same box culvert. It's actually been extended with a wood bridge on one end. There's a lot of maintenance issues with that wood extension. And then the inlet side is completely deteriorated concrete. And you can see they've dumped riprap behind it. But it needs attention on being on a paved route. It's a concern. This is that Jasper County Bridge. The piling's completely gone, and there's more piling with issues. That's why that bridge is an immediate concern. It should be getting replaced this spring.
Talk to me about their bridge crew. So Jasper County employs and, I guess, has the equipment. They go out and do their own bridges.
Correct.
Are they saving money by doing that? Is there enough work to?
That's debatable. I mean, I think they have 10 or 15 more employees than we do. So whether you come out, I'm really interested to see how they do this. Not many counties have a bridge crew left. They really started to fade when the crane regulations got much greater, the safety. Most people got rid of their cranes at that point, like we did. They're one of the few to have it left, and I'm not sure they even need a crane to do what they're doing with these bridge replacements, so I'll be real interested to see how they do it. But yeah, they do all in-house. The Hickory Grove Bridge, this is a picture of what it used to look like, of course. That was the pier that got the most damage. This was back in 2001, so it was in pretty decent shape at that point. And then the issue is what it looked like before the FEMA flood event. And that's why we're struggling with FEMA so much. This happened outside of the time limits of the FEMA event. This was caused, see a little bit of the ice chunks in the back. They were over a foot thick, and they were huge, and they came down at a pretty good speed and rammed into this and caused a lot of this damage. You can see the fence. We'd already closed it at this point, so that was before the floods came, which was the FEMA event, which is one of the reasons why FEMA's having an issue with this one. It's because it was closed prior to. I got a recent update from FEMA. I forwarded that email to you to show you where we stand, and that was kind of a new option. They're talking about giving us a little partial funding to get us back to this state. I don't know how they do that, but and the state.
Did you save the pieces that you fished out of the creek bed?
Yeah. So I don't know how much funding that would be. They don't need it at this point, and but if they gave us partial funding, the difficulty with that would be all the additional funding would have to be local dollars. Because the more and more I keep hearing from them, if you show any sign of federal money available, automatically FEMA just backs out. It's not eligible at all. Technically, we probably have federal aid bridge money available, but so does every other county if they need to use it, you know, if it's an emergency. So this is kind of a new thing with FEMA saying that if you have any bridge funding available at all, they won't fund it. Like I said, there's six other counties with wood bridges that were taken out, and none of them have been approved either. We just have this added issue of ours was actually closed before the actual time limits of the FEMA event, which makes ours even more difficult. At this point, we haven't got an official answer from FEMA on what they will actually do. We got that semi-answer that it wasn't eligible because of this. That was after they gave us the determination it was eligible. So I responded with a reply, essentially an appeal, and I got a response back. You can't appeal something until we give you an official answer. So they won't give me an answer on how long their official answer will take to get. So we're kind of at a standstill, unfortunately. And if we proceed programming this as federal aid project, that immediately takes FEMA out. They won't participate, period. So we got to be careful not to do that too early. But at the same time, we had talked a little bit about if we could delay this 1 year, best case scenario would be to replace this bridge next construction season, next summer, not this upcoming summer, but the one after, with federal aid bridge funds. Waiting on FEMA is going to at least extend that one more year, and we don't know what that answer will be, so that's a risk we'd have to take. So
For me, I think we've got to extend this thing. I mean, I know that Hertz operates over there, and it's causing a little hardship for them, but it's $550,000, is that?
Yep.
I think we got to go the full way, and so if we need to move this back 1 year from 15 to 16 in order to give us the best opportunity possible to receive the FEMA funding, I think we should do it.
And I've had a couple of conversations with Randy Hertz, and he understands the position we're in, and the bridge was load limited prior to all this anyway, wasn't it? And so they technically they shouldn't have been using it for much equipment anyway.
10 tons for a long time. So, yeah, I'm fine with waiting a little bit longer to see when we can get an answer from FEMA.
So would you make that change in what we approve next week?
Right now it's currently in there as a locally funded project.
So you leave it in there at 15?
leave it in there at 15. What we did to try to keep the time frame going, the DOT is viewing it as a federal aid bridge right now because they help out a lot on the federal environmental reviews for us. So they're doing that process without us adding it as a federal aid bridge project in our program because they know FEMA, either way, it's going to have to meet those federal requirements. Yep. So they're helping us out there without adding it in our program as a federal aid project. So that's how it stands now, locally funded, and that's how we budgeted in our local funds, local budget side of things is federal. So that's how we'll proceed with that for now. We'll give it a little bit more time and try to get a better answer from FEMA. The state kind of works on behalf of the counties. They're the middleman. They're trying to get that money for us, but they're in the middle, and they're fighting for us. That's all I can really say. But right now, that last email wasn't very promising, but I think it's worth trying. And that last sheet is our bridge wants. I've changed the title on that this year to wants instead of needs because I'm not sure we're going to be able to move forward with a lot of these bridges with the current funding situation. So a lot of these could be closed in the future. The only new one we added to that list is at the first one, and that is that 248th bridge north of the Hickory Grove Bridge. Here's the Hickory Grove Bridge right here, and that's the bridge just half a mile north. Only gets 15 vehicles a day. That automatically excludes it from any federal bridge funds. And it has to be over 25 vehicles a day to even consider getting federal bridge funds. So that's another issue to the bridge to the north. And it received a little damage with the flooding last spring, too. It took off a lot of the protection planking. It had a concrete icebreaker on the front. But the other piers are just wood, unprotected, and they seem to survive. But it has a lot of deteriorated piling, too, on all piers. So at some point, we're going to try to do minor maintenance on this and keep it going, but we anticipate.
Feels like we talked about this. Do we need both of these bridges, both this one and the Hickory Grove? Because then you got Highway 30 to the north of this one.
Yeah, this really only serves this little stretch of road here, and that's it.
And there's really nobody that lives on it until you
get up here.
And then there's another house on that north-south stretch. But they, you know.
Well, and my point is I completely see why we've got to have that one when we don't have the Hickory Grove Bridge. But once we have the Hickory Grove Bridge back and you've got that one in Highway 30, is this one that we're really going to need in the system?
I would say no in the future, especially if we have to use our federal aid money to do the Hickory Grove Bridge. We're going to have to be getting rid of some of these longer bridges. And a few other on the wants list. This is probably the next Skunk River Bridge that we will do a replacement on. But with these large trusses, you just don't know how long they're going to last. We'll just keep our eye on it. And when it needs replacement, I know conservation has indicated they want to see this replaced in the future and never close. So at this point, it'll probably get moved up into the program when the time comes. Our Cambridge issues down here, a number of bridges. We have the large one over the Skunk here, and then the hole in the wall, and then the small bridge north of it. That's the hole in the wall, and then the bridge is right here. In one of the piers, we had wood piling that were completely rotted away. We did, after we had that public hearing last week on possibly vacating this stretch of road, there was a lot of comments from the public that that might not be a good idea, mainly due to the ag traffic. So we went in and reinforced that pier, keep that bridge open as long as we can. But we may have to replace this bridge at some point, but it's been on our possible closed list for quite a while. Isaac Walton Bridge, that one doesn't get a ton of traffic, so that may be a future closure. And this is that other bridge by Cambridge over the Skunk. This is on the Hamilton County line bridge that gets, I think, 20 vehicles a day. So that one will never be federal aid eligible. And talking with Hamilton County, they agree it'll probably be a closure at some point. It's posted pretty low due to the wood piling. on our historic bridge in the background. We replaced the one around the corner a couple years back, so we had the historic issue back here. It's in really rough shape. Probably be a closure at some point when it gets in a little bit rougher shape, but the only way we could really replace that is to build a road around it, and it doesn't get very much traffic. And the Ames Water Treatment Plant Road has a bridge over the Skunk River. We've done a lot of reinforcing the stream banks around it to try to extend the life of this bridge, so it's still in okay shape. That's it for bridges right now. Any questions on the bridge program? I wanted to point out one project that's in the program that doesn't show up on the map or anywhere else. It's in the actual DOT's program. It's a recent, just got word on this last week. It's an edgeline paving project to use federal safety money on. There was a pot of money that came available, and it was first come, first serve, and apparently I got ours in soon enough. The way I justified it was these roads are some of our lower traveled paved roads. We were letting the edge line paint go because we can't afford to paint that every year. So we're able to say, for safety reasons, we could add edge line if we get this grant. So they have to do a higher level of paint. So what these would be is they'd mill a depression in the road and then put a higher quality paint in there so the plows don't take that paint off, so it'd be a long-lasting paint. But just for this, I think it's 28 miles, it's $170,000 to do that. So at this point, we're told we have approval, but we haven't got the federal aid agreement yet. So that's in the program, 100% funded by federal aid funds, because usually that doesn't happen, but DOT has another safety fund that they can use to match the federal aid funds for us. So they're trying to help us make these safety funds easier to get. So that is in the program. That's the only, I didn't put it on the map because it scattered the map with lines that look like paving jobs, and didn't want to add that in there. I wanted to touch on gravel and rock real quick. We expected a lot of these this upcoming winter with the hard freeze we had, but so far so good. We've had a 5 to 10 miles at a pretty rough shape that we've had to add quite a bit of rock just to make them passable. But other than that, a lot of our gravels are looking pretty good shape so far. I pointed out last year one thing we could do in the future is, it's hard to tell here, but the darker lines are the farm to market system. About half of that system is still gravel. We could use farm to market funds to put rock on that system only. But if we get tight on our local side of our budget, local funds, we could look at doing that, at least have good rock on our farm to market system. And wanted to point this out for a couple reasons. Just to give you an idea, if we put 1,000 tons per mile on a gravel road, that comes out to 1.5 inches thick. Thickness of gravel, that's not very much. What our current practice is 250 tons a mile. That's a quarter of an 1.5 inches. Very thin surface. If you put that 1,000 on our entire gravel system at $9 a ton, our current price, that's $6.3 million. That doesn't include hauling, so that would be a $10 million number to put that on the entire system. At our current rate of 250, it'd be 1.5 million. You know, you're looking maybe at 2.5-3 million, including the hauling cost. Another reason I'm bringing that up is our service bureau, County Engineer Service Bureau in Des Moines, is constantly trying to put data together to give the state legislature on our rural funding road needs. And one of their latest tools is a gravel analyzer. And what they're doing is putting something together like this to get the picture across to the state that what our needs are for rock. And how it's done is it's based on probability. If you put a certain thickness of rock on your roads, I think what they're shooting for is a 1 in 6 chance of your roads turning to mud in the spring. So it's based on a probability type situation, but it's just a good tool to show them what we need to be investing on our gravel roads, because we're not coming anywhere near this right now.
No.
We're doing a quarter of the county per year at the most. So we're falling behind, and that eventually is going to lead to a bad spring sometime, and then you're dumping rock and just losing half of it in the mud, and that's not the way to go about doing it. But I wanted to just bring you aware of this gravel analyzer tool that Phil's working on, and don't know where that road or the fuel tax increase discussion is going to end up. It could be a last-minute scramble at the State House, but right now not real optimistic about it. Five-year program maps behind me. I'll leave that in here throughout the next week for the public to view. And then last but not least, I've handed this out to you. This is the worksheet for our balances and all of our special funds. Three columns, revenues, expenditures, and balance. The yellows are the funds coming in, farm to market, STPs, the SERPA funds for highways, federal aid highways, and then BRS is the bridge, federal bridge funding. And then all of our projects are put in here, coming out, and then our balances are on the right. I wanted to point out we'd have a little bit of a balance in the farm to market side, but it doesn't take but one highway project to stick in there to eat that up real quick. And I expect to look at our pavements this spring and summer and see how they made it through the winter, but I'm sure there'll be some additions next year. STP in particular, I wanted to point out, besides the fuel tax increase, our other main goal this year at the State House is to get the funding swap done. And what that does is the DOT will take the federal aid money and spend it on their projects, and they'll give us local dollars in return. So we have a bit of a balance, but my hope is we'll be able to swap that into our local budget before too long. That takes a code change, so that takes legislative action. The DOT can't do that on their own. We're hoping that gets done this year, but that's why you see a bit of a balance carried there. The federal bridge fund, it gets negative down here a couple years out, so we're right about where we need to be. The Hickory Grove Bridge is the big question. I have it coming out of that federal aid bridge funds now, but we just don't know if that's going to happen or not. We got bridges to bump up and take its place if that doesn't need to be done. Those are our balances in a nutshell. Like I say, the goal is to have this back on the board's agenda next week for final approval on the 8th. That meets our April 15th deadline. I do have all this documentation on our website and my presentation. I will point out, if you try to pull that up, it's quite large. We've tried to reduce the size as much as we could, but if you have high speed, if you wait there a minute or two, it'll eventually come up. It takes a while. Any questions?
As usual, thorough report. Thank you, Darren.
Okay. That takes us down to liaison assignments and committee meetings.
Darren, you can stay there. I'd like part of my liaison as Darren's liaison and as our liaison to emergency management, I'd like to have Keith come up. We know there was a Stover Bale fire. I'd just like an update on that. I've heard several things up to and including that we needed to haul rock out there. Just like you guys to update us on what's going on there.
As far as the rock hauling, we did. We received a call from Keith, and incident commander on site requested some 3-inch big rock because they were having such a hard time getting the water trucks in on site to just control the fire to keep it from spreading. So we felt that was a big enough need to do. We had 3 trucks dedicated to that. You may know a little bit more, but hopefully when this is all said and done, DuPont may be paying some of that bill for our trucking and the rock cost.
How much rock did we haul?
I don't have a tonnage on it yet. It's at least 6 truckloads, tandem truckloads.
That all went on site?
On private property, yep. And we, in the afternoon, we went out and closed that stretch of road, which was necessary. Started to get a lot of sightseers, especially in the afternoon. So a lot of the emergency vehicles are parked on the roads and the smoke. So we had to officially close the road yesterday afternoon. We got that open back up this morning, even though it's still smoldering and probably will for a number of days.
Weeks. We had 7 fire departments that actually responded. Most of the time we had approximately 20-25 personnel on site.
throughout the fire. As said, secondary roads provided rock and closed, helped us close the road with road signs. Salvation Army also responded to help feed the first responders that were on site. DuPont was on site throughout the event, and we also received assistance from Marshall County EMA when we needed some specialized equipment to try and keep this, the fire from spreading. It started approximately 7:20 through DuPont. It is theorized that it was by lightning. We don't have anything definitive yet as to what actually caused it. The construction, the site setup allowed the fire to move across the rows of the hay bales. The wind was out of the south, and the hay bales were, or the straw stover bales were oriented east-west, so it was perfect to just transmit the fire on across. We thought we had a big enough fire break mid-afternoon, but it jumped across that and then burned the other five on the other north side. We suspect that embers from it caused a fire approximately 0.4 miles north of the facility. They also did a back burn on a house that is due east of the actual site itself that had some tall grass around it, some prairie-like structure, and they decided to do a backfire to, as a preemptive to make sure that that facility was safe. There was firefighters out there throughout the evening monitoring the site, and it continues to burn at this time.
And just remind me, we had some meetings with DuPont here a year and a half or so ago, and we looked at some slides or a presentation that these stacks were going to be 100 feet apart, just to try to avoid this type of a situation. The area was supposed to be graveled to allow access not only for their trucks, because we had a concern with these trucks sitting on the road and the amount of mud they would drag out on the public roadway and the way the sites would be maintained. And apparently at this point, that's not the case. And this is, I know this is the second, last fall was the second second year that they added Stover to that particular storage site. So
I have to agree with you that it was our impression that there would be significant fire breaks between them. It was a stack was supposed to be three long rows with a significant gap between them to keep them from jumping, and this site did not have it structured that way, and there was no gravel. And we did have fire trucks that had to be pulled out using a tracked vehicle to get them out of the mud.
I'd like to request that we get some kind of after-action report where definitely the two of you, probably with Margaret and Leanne and even Jessica, get together and figure out exactly what was agreed to. Because I'm like Paul. My recollection is that DuPont made certain representations of the way things were going to be before. Because we had a lot of conversation about how we were going to classify these and what we were going to do. And right now I sit here feeling like maybe that was not what DuPont did. And I just want to know for certain, and then I want to know what, if any, recourse we have.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We've got, you know, at a minimum, the county's invested six loads of gravel. At a minimum, plus, I don't know how you guys would count your time out there. You know, that was a huge manpower show out there, And we've gotten some emails from the resident that lives and owns the property directly east of it, and this is exactly what she was afraid of. So,
yes, sir. And we are gathering the information, be producing an after action, and be working with DuPont on this.
Thanks for you guys' work.
I don't have anything for liaison. So that would take us to public forum number two. Comments from the public on items on this agenda. The board may not take any action due to the requirements of the open meeting law, but may do so in the future. And not see anybody move to the mic. Announcement from the supervisor.
Pass. Move that we adjourn.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
We're adjourned.